This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
I want to clarify one thing from yesterday that was maybe a little confusing. Someone asked me about this word fear, and how is this that a little first grader sitting on the floor reading her book of her own volition is somehow connected to fear in the process? And that is a little confusing, because in the Bible, fear is a very deep word, actually. It's more than just being afraid. You think about that, the little girl sitting on the floor, in love with reading, caught up in the wonder and awe of that. Maybe that gets closer to the meaning. Not a fear like we would think of fearing God, but just the wonder and the awe and the deep conviction that I can do this. Maybe that gets closer to it. I found it interesting that a number of years ago, and I don't know how many years ago, maybe 30 or 40 years ago, there was at a university a group of philosophers, psychologists, and a research team that got together and decided that they were going to figure out exactly how human beings learn and the process that they go through to learn. And so they got themselves all together, and I have no idea how much money they spent. It wouldn't surprise me if it was $1 million. All right, and they came up with this process, and true to university research team, they like to use big words. This is what their process looks like, and it has 5 steps. Pardon the big word. Oh, I lost my place already. What did I do here? Here we go. Always hitting the wrong cursor key here. Exposure. Think about how that lines up with hearing. And then activation lines up with learn, comprehension. And then, interestingly, they use the word conviction. And then application. 5-step process. And if they would have just read their Bible, they could have come to the same conclusion with a whole lot simpler words. It is intriguing how philosophers, they are very good at defining things. They don't always give us the best solutions, maybe, or the best practical outworking, but they are usually pretty good at defining things. And it is almost alarming how similar those two processes are. The one that philosophers came up with and the one that God laid out in the Bible. So maybe that helps you understand how conviction and fear, the deep sense that I can do this now on my own, and no one needs to tell me to do it, and no one needs to give me an assignment. It's born deep down. All right. Today we have the first we're going to look more in detail now at that first level of hearing. And hearing means that you're a listener and that someone is talking, teaching, communicating. And whenever a person is communicating with his heart, there are basically going to be 3 things that are communicated. And I think this goes all the way back to Socrates. And Howard Hendricks gives it these 3 words in his book, Teaching to Change Lives, that I showed you yesterday. The first thing, of course, will be content. You're going to be saying something. There's going to be words. There is going to be the passion behind how you present the content and all of that. And then, along with that, is going to be a compassion that your listeners will feel. So there's something you're hearing, there's something you're feeling, and even deeper, it's amazing how deep this goes, even deeper you are communicating with your character. So content, compassion, and character is the heart of every communicator. And you cannot walk into the classroom and decide that I'm going to keep my character secret. I'm only going to push the content. That is a lie. You will speak with your life, and so we take that seriously. All right, so maybe a way that the speaker and listener connect here, just because we want to try to analyze it, we'll break it into compartments a little bit. although in real life it's hard to do that. So probably content lines up somewhat with hearing, compassion somewhat with the stress of the student working on trying to make this work in his life, and character more with fear. I mentioned yesterday that I wish I knew how to bring all my students to a deep conviction, you know, but I don't know how to do that. But I assume, and it's somewhat scary to think about, I assume that if I have any chance at bringing a student to deep felt conviction, it probably has something to do with who I am. And so that's why I put the arrow there. So today, we will think a little bit about this content. I have to present this content. This is how we will break it down over the next 3 days. Today, we'll look at the hearing level and how me as a communicator will deliver my content. And that's where the word creativity comes in. I must find creative ways to deliver my content. Now, I was nervous half the summer about how Jonathan's talks and my talks would they overlap, would they, you know? And sure enough, today we hit it right on. I mean, he gave you a great 45-minute talk on how to deliver content. Now, I'm not too nervous about that. What I plan to do, though, is not rehash the things that he told you already. But I went back here and tried to think about how I can build around that, build on top of it. And so this subject is actually so broad that I wondered how to cover it in 25 minutes anyway. So here we go. You had a good dose of it already this morning, and hopefully what I say builds on top of that. All right, so you have to have attention. And I was talking this morning with, I doubt he's in here, Mr. Brubaker, and he was saying how he gets so rattled when he looks at his audience and he knows that they're bored. And I have looked into the face of bored students. I don't think there's anything that has cost me more sleep than looking into the face of bored students. In fact, it has made me a much better listener. It probably has affected you too, right? Because you know what that feels like, especially when the group is small. Like my preferred audience size would be 25 people in a back room somewhere where we could really... When the audience gets this big, you don't feel quite as compelled to listen. Like if I phase out, the rest will keep engaged. The bigger the audience, the more that is a problem. And maybe that's why preachers struggle so much with eye contact. Have you thought about how preachers, they first look at that corner and then they look? And eye contact is one of the biggest struggles. Maybe it's because of that. I don't know. I've wondered a lot about that little thing of why it's so scary to get up here and look people in the eye. And I catch myself looking at ears and noses and everything else but your eyes. But there's something about the eye that communicates the heart and soul of who you are and engages and pulls you up here with me, although you're so far back there. And that the communicator must do. All right, so you must have went attention. And I put in my little blurb, and I've already been taken to task about this, that few of us are natural charmers. And I don't know if there's anything that I've worked harder on in my life than trying to engage and keep people with me. Except maybe the thing tomorrow about compassion, I don't know. So, do you know a natural charmer that can hold attention and never bomb a class for 180 days straight? I don't know any. Bruce Wilkinson, in his book, Seven Laws of the Learner, is that right? He was a big fan of Howard Hendricks, and he claims that Howard Hendricks never bombed a class. I think he was just a big fan. If you're that devoted, you know how it goes. I don't know who your big influencers are in your life, But there are some people that I'm convinced can get up here and they can pretty much go, ah, blah, 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 blah. And there would be people that would say, that was amazing. But those people have a problem with idolatry. Okay? And that's something entirely different. All right. The rest of us have to work hard at it. And even natural charmers. Some personalities really do have this, and it's a nice thing to have. Some of us don't. But I don't even care if you are a winsome personality. You're going to look into the face of bored students once in a while and realize, I got some more work to do. I forget if I told this yesterday. I'm already forgetting what stories I told and what I didn't. But I sat beside a boy years ago at a teacher's week, and I didn't know him, and he didn't know me, so we were meeting each other, and I found out it was his first year of teaching. And I said, are you nervous? Are you scared? And he said, oh, no. No, it runs in the genes. A lot of my family has taught. And I thought, boy, that he's going to fall flat somewhere. I don't know. Maybe he's here. And if he is, he learned some things, I can promise. Okay, so what is the craziest thing you ever did to try to get attention? You know, we teachers were attention getters. Now, you don't have to say, you can just think about it. How creative have you gotten at trying to win attention? I've seen people do some pretty crazy things, and I've done some myself. I do think we need to keep our dignity, but it is. I once did a cartwheel in the front of my room, and I already forget why I did it, but it had some interesting ramifications that I'll tell you about tomorrow in a story. That cartwheel actually made quite an episode for me. One time in speech class, there was a girl that was very put together. She just had her act together. She was kind of popular, and she was getting up there giving her speech. And I thought, the best thing that I can do for this girl is to create a real distraction, you know, something worse than a combine. And I was sitting there thinking about how I could create a distraction, and I felt this feeling welling up in me, like this is going to be a lot of fun. I can just do just about anything, and it'll actually have a point, like I have a lesson here. And I just suddenly got this urge to careen out of my desk and hurl myself violently across the room and slammed into the wall on the other side. And she looked up and said, "What are you doing?" And went right back to giving her speech. It didn't even work. But anyway, I tried. So I've thought about, my friends sometimes tell me, Linford, you would make the worst businessman because you're too afraid to take a risk. And I say, baloney. I have taken risks. Maybe not with my pocketbook, but with trying to get attention. And keeping attention. Okay, have you ever thought about how the prophets in the Old Testament, God had them do some of the most amazing things to try to get Israel to wake up and listen? Have you ever read through the book of Ezekiel? Unbelievable what that man had to do. And the really sad thing is the people kind of walked by and went, what the world? And kept on walking. And it didn't really work out. But he was obedient to God, so we'll say that that was good. Now, little assignment here. I want to think a little bit about what voices you are listening to. How honest can we be? And the reason this matters is because the voices that you feed off of are going to go inside and start burning, and they're going to come right back out and affect your students. All right, so here we go. What voices are you listening to? Make a little list. Make 5 or 10. All the influences in your life that are that you pay attention to, and they affect you, and they are making your heart churn. And I put all kinds of stuff up here. Dad, mom, preacher, teacher, mentor, friend, coach. I even added some risky ones because I want you to be honest. Podcaster, influencer, politician, blogger, vlogger, YouTuber. How honest can you be? All right, so maybe your mind's already starting to think about this, but I would like you to think, and this can maybe be a homework assignment for you, to be specific and start thinking about why you listen to these people. Why have you given your heart to these people? Why are they able to speak into your life? Maybe think more specifically, how have they been able to grab you in the first place? You don't have to write all that down now. Maybe even a deeper question would be, how specifically have they changed your heart? All right, so you might be thinking of someone in the past, maybe a teacher you had. You might be thinking about your minister. You might be thinking about the latest new vlogger that you like to follow. It might be someone fairly current. All right, now, I want you to do one more thing, and then this will come up later this week. Would you look down over your list and put a check mark beside the people that actually know your name? And they know your name, and you know theirs, and you have talked to them, and you maybe have a relationship with them. And then start thinking about this. This is an interesting phenomenon, I think, in our age, and I wonder about it, that I'm noticing that our lists of people that we give our hearts so freely to that they don't know us and we don't know them is growing larger. Do you have at least three people on your list that you have a relationship with that affect your heart? And maybe that's everyone on your list. I don't know. That'd be great. But increasingly in our day, with the plethora, however you say that word, of voices in our world, that's interesting. Especially for us as plain people who suddenly find ourselves less of, we're not readers as much as we used to be. We're more watchers now. And interesting changes, okay, in this matter. All right, so that's that. And I raised a few questions for you to think about. How they keep your attention, how they influence you, how do they consistently get your attention, how have they changed your heart, and how many people on your list actually know you. All right, and this matters because you're going to walk into a classroom and all those influences are going to come out and feed into your students. And it may be that one of your students who does not even know who Jordan Peterson is will, what are you laughing about? Will be influenced by Jordan Peterson. All right, so that was just an example. And one of the things that really got me thinking about this, some of you this will resonate with because you probably did the same thing I did, but 15 years ago, I listened to everything I could from Ravi Zacharias. And I imagined that he was a man I could really resonate with. Now, I don't know what to think of all this that's come out in the last 2 years, and you probably don't either, but it has at least made me think very seriously, you know what? Maybe I should just stay at home and just get to know my own people just a little bit better and let them speak into my life. All right. Now, that'll come up more in the next 2 days some. Let's go back to this little subject and think about presenting content. I think that's about as far as I'll probably go on my slide there. The last little bit here, we'll just try to build some on what Jonathan talked about this morning. Now, when I was in school, somewhere in about 9th or 10th grade, one random day, a somewhat sloppily dressed individual with big shaggy head of hair walked in our school. He was almost, whoa, like, what's this man doing in here? Walked up to our principal and he said, I am a traveling entomologist. Is that the name for a person who collects and studies bugs? Is that an entomologist? Almost had it right. There we go. Yep, he said, I am a traveling entomologist. He pulled in a little Dodge Omni. Remember those? Maybe you're too young. And I thought, my teacher is going to tell him to, you know, basically just move on down the street. But I don't know what crawled into my teacher that day. He said, sure, come on in. And he said, well, he said, I'm not ready today, but if it suits you, I'll come Thursday. I forget what day of the week it was, but it was like a couple days later. And so we were laughing at this guy. We thought, this is a joke. We begged our teacher, look, we're not into bugs. We just want to get our homework done. We don't have time for this. Can we be dismissed from the presentation? And my teacher sat us down and said, look, some of the younger ones might find this really interesting, and you should jump in. For camaraderie's sake, you should show a good time. Show interest, even though it's not maybe your thing. Well, this man showed up in a school bus, and Glenn said, that was my teacher's name, he said, go out. This man has cases of insects to carry in. And these cases were beautiful. And we helped him carry these cases in, and I looked at the man, and he was suddenly well-dressed, well-combed. He suddenly turned very professional. And I will never forget that day. That man convinced me in a two-hour afternoon time slot that it is possible to interest a person in absolutely anything. I tell you, I was not interested in bugs at all. Thought it was a joke. Now, like I said yesterday, I forget just about everything he said about bugs. But I know that he convinced me that entomology is a worthy cause and that it could be interesting. But what I really remember is how he just, inside of 30 seconds, he had every one of us, and he never left us go until he left. And some of that was probably personality. Some of it was his passion for his subject and incredible knowledge on it. So, as we were discussing this morning, you have to take these subjects and study them until you almost cry. You're tired of studying them. And that's been my life, and it's probably, you're starting to discover that it's yours too. Blood, sweat, and tears. One of the things that I actually find challenging now that used to weary me is that there's certain subjects that you really like and you grab them and you go with them, like history. I love history, so I could go and go on history. But what about your least favorite? Like, could you write down your least favorite subject? You probably know it, right? And then think about what it would be like to have to get up and teach that. So for me, that is, actually there's one worse than insects, and that's botany. And for all of you plant lovers and all that, that's great. I'm sure you could convince me. But botany is the subject that I remember opening up the book, looking at the beautiful pictures, and just sighing. How will I ever do this? How am I going to get up and say, look, everyone, lilies are amazing. And so you start studying, and you tell yourself, there is something here. There is some part of my personality that can resonate with this. For me, I found two things. I had to look through the whole scope and decide on two things of this that at least would be somewhat interesting. For me, it's landscaping and trees. So that I like. I can kind of go on that. And I'm also now in recent years been enamored with photosynthesis because I'm getting into chemistry and I like that. So now photosynthesis is my, and if you were on the CLE workshop and I did that photosynthesis thing, maybe you found it boring, I don't know, but to me it is incredibly fascinating. So I'm getting there. I'm not quite ready to, if I was here as a student and not a speaker, I would have joined Dana Atkinson's workshop because he is very different from me and I'm sure I could learn something. When he sees a patch of weeds, he says, aha, 30 different symbiotic relationships. When I see a patch of weeds, I say, Javen, go get the weed whip. And we get rid of 30 symbiotic relationships. Okay? And that's how we're different. So he has his thing. And, you know, would you rather teach a Sunday school lesson out of the book of Habakkuk? Or would you rather teach the Christmas story? I don't know how you found it, but for me, the hardest lesson to teach is not the most difficult, but the most well-worn. And so in speech class, one of the exercises that I have our students do is I'll write a very trite, well-worn word up on the board, like love. And then everyone has to get up and talk about love. Oh, and this is actually you think about this. What is it about the heart where, have you ever thought about this, that the most amazing metaphors become cliches? Amazing stories become like manna. That's one of the best descriptions I can give. Like, songs are like this too. God told the children of Israel, on the first day, manna will taste like honey. 3 days later, blah. And too often that's the way, and it's our heart that just says, I need something new and fresh. And so the story that Jonathan told this morning about that American farmer boy turned bomber turned missionary is an exciting story, and we'd probably all listen to it, and I would say he probably sold 300 copies of that book. But listen, the story of David and Goliath is just as exciting as that. But if he would have stood up here and told the story of David and Goliath, some of you would have been, and what? Why is that? That is an intriguing concept. Actually, this is the difference between your favorite preacher and your least favorite preacher. Your favorite preachers know how to creatively recreate content. They do that all the time. That is what a good preacher does. Your least favorite preacher... One time, our conference has a youth conference every October. And one year we sat up there, and they got this man in from, I don't know where he was from. And he got up, and his idea of creatively packaging content was loud and high. And he started telling, he just yelled. He started yelling out the prodigal story of the prodigal son. And he left his father and he went to a... And we're like, brother, we know the story. The only thing that happened is that he burned 1,000 calories. My favorite preachers are fat. They sit at their desks so long. That they have learned how to make the old worn stories live again. And that's going to cost you hours of time. And that's just the long and the short of it. One of the things that's happening to me is I have a very good 7th and 8th grade teacher that the students get right before they get me. This is really getting frustrating for me. He's not here, but he's a good teacher. And he'll come to my room after school and he'll say, did you know? And he'll tell me this story that he just told his students that day. And I'll be like, there went that story. Got to take that one out of my notes. Vince done ruined it for me. And I don't have any monopoly on all the stories, but it is really hard to teach right after a really good teacher. And so now it has me digging all over again. Oh boy, I got to make this, because Vince is over there stealing my stories. And I can't stop him. There's no way I could stop him. He needs to be able to do that. And I just need to keep digging deeper. All right. And some of your favorite courses will become challenging because they'll gain so much weight. They just get bigger every year. And you have to start learning what of all the fascinating things. What can I leave unsaid? Maybe a few practical things about telling stories. We talked a lot about stories this morning. Jonathan talked about telling stories. He told some stories. And so maybe just a few things. Maybe you don't feel like you are a storyteller. Jesus was a storyteller. Now, frankly, I believe that the reason the people looked at Jesus and said, "Never man spake like this man," is because he was filled with the Spirit of God. But then the Spirit of God moved him in amazing ways. And so when he spoke very practically, down to earth, resonated with the people, and they just followed him by the thousands. And those stories resonated with him. So people tell stories. Sometimes people come to me and they say, "Where do you find all your stories?" Well, yes, it is a lot of hard work to find stories, but you know what's even harder? To remember them all. And so, a couple of things about telling stories. All right, so the first thing, I have 3 points for telling a story, and I didn't get this put up on my board, but this is pretty short, okay? So the first skill in storytelling is to, and you've heard this before, make a long story short. You've heard that so many times, but it is very important because the worst storytellers are those who get lost in the details. And in speech class, this is one of the things I really try to work on the students. Some of them just get up there and they just ramble on trying to fill in every detail. Skip it. Skip the details and get to the point. Learn how to make a long story short. Half of the details are not needed in order to make the lesson stick. Another one is the opposite of that. Learn how to make a short story long. Now, how do you make a short story long? All right, well, let's think about that a little bit. Good teachers, good storytellers know how to make a short story long. And what we mean by that is, let me just tell you a short little story that you've maybe heard before, or you've heard a story like this, okay? Let's think about this little short story where there's a college campus in Iowa, and the students at the college campus decide that they're going to play a trick on the campus personnel. And so they go out to an Iowa farm and they get 3 pigs. All right, they bring these 3 pigs in, and they number the pigs 1, 2, and 4, and they cut them loose on campus. All right, so the college personnel get all frantic, and they go around to collecting these pigs, and some of them come running, "We found pig number 1, and then here comes another group, they found pig number 2, and then here comes another group, they found pig number 4, and then the rest of them get together, and for the rest of the day, they look for pig number 3. Okay, there. That's a short little story that took me 20 seconds to tell. Now, the typical person will go, "Ah, ha, ha, that was a funny trick." And they'll go on and they'll say, "Tell me another one." But a teacher never does that. A teacher will pull that story apart and will think about it and will say, "What are the 3 or maybe 5 lessons that I could teach from that story?" Is your brain already turning? Maybe I gave you a morning devotion for the year. Use that story and then, I don't know, how would you apply it? You got 3 ways? Don't stop until you have at least 3 things that you could, and then you have to do the third thing. And the third thing, the third art in storytelling is this, that you will never remember all your stories. And it's intimidating to think about that you should write daily lesson plans for every lesson all 180 days of the year. But nothing has paid off more for me than that. I think I have daily lesson plans for probably close to 15 courses after all these years, and I can't remember the half of what's in them. But there is nothing quite like this terrible experience where time got away and suddenly I have a 45-minute science class to teach, and I just didn't have time to prepare. And so I'm yanking open my notes 5 minutes before class, and I'm like, "Oh man, this is gonna be bad." And I look at my notes and, "Oh, I totally forgot I get to tell this story today." And there it is. It was long gone from my memory, but on instant recall, because it was in my notes, Now I got the story back, and away we go, winging it through class, and everyone thinks, wow, he had it pulled off a real science class. No, he didn't. He just took notes. That's all. And that's overwhelming, I'm sorry, to think about putting all this stuff in my notes at the right places, but few things pay off more than that. All right, I want to say one more thing here yet before I close. Something else about Jesus. Not only was he a master storyteller and teacher, an engager, an attention getter, although that's not a nice term. When you think about Jesus as a teacher, and one of the things that he was really good at, Jesus focused on effectiveness, not efficiency. Effectiveness is far more important than efficiency. Think about Jesus on the way to Samaria and stalls his time working with the lady at the well or something like that. And in our schools, we get too wrapped up in efficiency, and efficiency makes us boring. Effectiveness is far better. But you might have to have some discussions with your board about this, or you might get in trouble. Like, how much can you stall around telling stories and not get to the end of the textbook? But I think it is far better to slow down, do what you do well, and if you don't make it to the end, that'll be fine. The other thing that you need to focus on is there is no way that you can go this year and be really good at everything, but choose one subject and tell yourself, this is going to be my subject this year. It's going to be botany. It's going to be the one I struggle with. And I am going to camp out on this one, and we'll just try to get by in the other ones. But this one, here we go. I'm going to have lesson plans and stories and research and extra stuff and blood, sweat, and tears in this one. And then next year, I can lay that one to the side and pull up another one. And then, of course, now you see that I'm giving you a vision for 15 years because it takes a while to get there. But that is a way to get through the mass of things one little step at a time. Plug in your stories, plug in your illustrations where they need to be, and go at it slow, and as time goes on, you'll become a better and better storyteller, engager, winning attention, and keeping attention. Now, keep thinking about that little list of voices that you wrote down. Keep dwelling on that a little bit. We might talk about that more in the coming days. Lord bless the rest of your day.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.